It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, I had a really good cold open. I can't remember what it was because I'm so distracted by my wife. So, okay, this is a saga. Be prepared.
Oh, saga, okay.
So, use it in a specific chair when you come over to record.
That's correct.
That chair is the closest chair to the door.
Yes.
So it is perhaps unsurprising that that chair frequently just gets stuff when we come home.
Sure.
Yeah. Purses, shopping, whatever. So it is never not covered in stuff by Thursday.
Right.
And we call it William's chair. And I used to say, am I clearing off William's chair or are you? Not because I was opposed to it, but because frequently most of it was hers and she would get weird about where I would put it. Or I'd have to ask her anyway or something like that. And at one point it came up that she was bothered by me doing this every time. Because it made it sound like she was in trouble or something, because I'd be like, are you going to clear off William's chair? So she said, even though it was just sort of a semantic thing, we switched to, I would say, I assume you're clearing off William's chair. And this was useful because there was no judgment involved, but it did help her remember because sometimes she didn't remember. And so that's what we've been doing forever. I assume you're clearing off William's chair. And sometimes it's a joke, like if we don't have a podcast, I'll say, I assume you're clearing off William's chair. And she's like, what? Yeah, what? So just now she's going to make our dinner because we're doing separate dinners tonight because I'm podcasting. And she comes back into the room and she says, were you just waiting for me to notice that William's chair is completely not ready? Oh. She said, are you assuming I'm going to notice that William's chair isn't ready? Which, you know, clever. Great. And then she went over to it while we're just chatting. And she was messing with some of the stuff, which is fine because there's a lot of crap there. And she was cleaning some stuff up and I didn't think anything of that until you got on this call. And I was like, hey. And she's like, William's not coming over. Why am I doing this? To which I was like, were you really doing that? I had no idea. Like, she was cleaning up the chair for you to show up. So she stopped. So it's not in a position you could sit in it, but that's fine. Cause as it came up, you're not coming.
There's been though a Williams chair since before we podcasted. Cause we used to come over.
Yes. But there is one very fine distinction you are missing.
Okay.
That chair, which is still around, was not called William's chair.
Oh.
That was called William's ass's chair.
What?
It was specifically your butt's chair.
Oh, why?
It was referred to as William's ass's chair. I don't remember why it started that way, but it did, and that was what we called it. It was William's ass's chair.
Okay, whatever.
This one is just William's chair. On rare occasion, William's podcast chair, but mostly just William's chair.
It's not the same chair, though.
No, vastly different chair.
Yeah, somehow.
I put way too much enthusiasm in that, but they really are very different chairs.
Yeah, because I used to go over, once a month you guys would have
thing. We had Gaia's Feast, which was a little pagan spirituality discussion group.
Yeah, and it seemed like I was I didn't try to sit in the same chair every time, but I kind of did.
Yeah, I don't know how exactly it happened, but yeah, you would just sit in that one. And very quickly, that was like, even when there wasn't discussion going on, that was how we would refer to the chair that William always sits in at Guy's Feast. And at a certain point, it became William's ass chair.
You guys didn't live in that house, though, the first time I attended.
No.
Well, I wasn't the same chair either, probably.
No, I don't know that you got into the chair until here. I mean, the chair was around. We've had that chair for a very long time.
Yeah,
I don't know that your butt got really into it until we moved here.
The first time I went to one of these things, you guys were in Coralville. You lived in that apartment.
Oh, in Rushmore.
Yeah, that was the first time.
Did we have guys' feasts in Rushmore? I don't even remember those. Wow. It was
some kind of get-together. I don't remember.
No, that tracks.
Yep, I remember that.
Interesting.
A few times before you guys were in the house. But
maybe that's when we started it up again was then. Because it owes itself to an older thing called Waxing Moon Circle that was around many years before, hosted by people who don't live here anymore. Or maybe, no, I think we used to do it in the house I was living with when I lived with Sherry and Eben, which actually was a house that the people who used to do Waxing Moon Circle lived in. And it was much bigger. And I know we did it there for a few times. And then we moved out of that house and in the separate apartments. There was probably no place big enough. And then when Trish and I moved to Rushmore, we probably decided it was big enough.
It was a nice apartment. I mean, it was
a good apartment. Room in there. I liked it. Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magic Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast that knows what picante sauce is supposed to taste like.
Okay.
Oh, no, that the paste picante sauce commercial has been going through my head, the one from the 90s or whatever.
Yeah, why is that?
This from New York City. I have no idea.
And then it changed. There was New York City, and then it was New Jersey or something. Or maybe.
Yeah, another town that had no business knowing.
What picante sauce is supposed to taste like.
I mean, Bangor, Maine or something.
Something. Yeah. Not San Antonio. That's the point.
No, that's where they know. Yeah. San Antonio is where they know what picante sauce is. And also this podcast.
That's not in San Antonio.
No.
If that's Iowa City behind you there.
It is Iowa City behind me.
If you were actually in Iowa City.
I love how you clarified that before we started recording, but for verisimilitude, you feigned ignorance again now that we're in the show.
Oh,
that's
am I
commitment.
Feigning,
I appreciate
am
that.
Am I feigning ignorance? I'm just pointing out that it's
Iowa City. Oh, you said if that's Iowa City, as though you didn't know.
No, I didn't say if. I said it is Iowa City.
Oh, okay.
Because I was going, yes, I did. Why would I have said
you could
if?
See that? I didn't know you could see that. Sorry.
I'm looking right at you.
No, you're looking off to the side. I can tell.
I'm trying to stop that. I'm trying to spot where you're at, where that is, what corner that is.
Oh, I can tell you. I mean, it's College in Dubuque? No, Iowa. No.
That is Dubuque. Iowa
and
Dubuque.
Yeah.
It's Iowa and Dubuque. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you kept going off to the right hand side of the picture, at least from my perspective, that's when you'd get to Basta and immediately you'd get to where Atlas was, that's now St. Birch or whatever.
And you can see the old Capitol like right up the street.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Where did you get that picture?
Bing. Same place I get all my pictures.
And it's just like a wallpaper picture?
Typed in Iowa City in the image search.
Oh, that's pretty cool. It's suddenly making me want to go to there for some reason.
Well, that's an old one, so that'd be harder. It don't look like that no more.
Is that Deadwood? Is it Deadwood?
No. No, around the corner is Deadwood. Deadwood's, oh no, sorry, it's not Deadwood, it's Bo James, and it's around the corner. Deadwood's different.
Isn't Deadwood right there? Right over
it,
your
it could be.
Right shoulder? I think it's supposed to be. It used to be.
Then I'm confused about where this image is, but that's fine. All right, so, wait. Yeah. Because the Sheraton's at the end.
Yeah.
See, I thought, you're talking about right over here?
Yes.
I thought that's where Masala was.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if Deadwood is still there.
I mean, Deadwood still exists.
Oh, well then
I don't think
right
they
there.
Moved around.
It's right there. And closer to this to
Oh, no, wait. I'm
to Iowa. There used to be a record store there, and off of your left shoulder, there used to be a Pizza Hut back there, but then it became all kinds of other things. I don't know what it is now.
This cannot be interesting to a listener.
And then you can see the bank clear in the back at the end. And was that the, is that a, is it still a, it's a Marriott,
the Sheraton, right? Sheraton.
Oh, a Sheraton. Is that still what it is?
I think so. That's the old neon sign.
This doesn't look like a, this looks like a more recent photo, because that tall building there is a newer building.
That's the Vetro, but the Vetro, I think that's just the Vetro, and the Vetro has been around since before the Sheraton changed.
Oh man, it's been, I mean, a lot of things have changed since I was, you know, I mean, I graduated in 91.
And seriously, if you're not local and a very specific kind of nerd, this can't be of interest to anybody.
It's weird how I'm
the only ones who know the landmarks.
It's weird how I just live in Coralville, but I'm almost never in downtown Iowa City.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, well, strange.
Downtown, I always think downtown is trouble. It's got youths. No, it's parking is hard and it's crowded, and I don't like that. I have a friend who's like, you're full of shit. You just go, you park in the ramp. It's not a big deal. But like, we, when it's, when school's in session, we won't like tend to have dinner down there or anything.
Yeah, when I lived in Iowa City, I didn't have a car, and I loved it. I loved walking around in Iowa City because everything was so close, but I couldn't imagine what it'd be like to have a car, because like you said, where would you park? And and then you'd have to pay for it. And also, I remember when the, since I didn't go home for the summers or during interims at all, I always stayed in Iowa City.
That's really, weird.
Why?
Because most people go home. You are obsessed with your home, and your home's not that far.
Well, it's because, if you recall, clear up until my senior year of high school, I had to share my brothers or whatever. The house is really small.
Oh, so you just loved having a place to yourself.
Well, I whether
like,
I
screw
it,
them.
Whether I loved it or not, I preferred it, certainly. Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to have to. They're just. But it wasn't just for me. I mean, the fact of the matter is, when I left, there was, that meant that there were only two people left in that room. And of course, they expanded so that they had all that space. I wasn't going to kick one of my brothers out of the room and have him sleep on the couch or something. You know what I'm saying?
So I see the argument. I'm surprised you'd make it, or that your family would be okay with that.
Well, I don't think anyone was okay with it, but there wasn't a lot. I mean, what was I gonna do?
You sleep on the couch.
Well, that's, I mean, yes, that's true. I could sleep on the couch, but I also didn't have a car, so I would have had to get someone else who was going home at the same time and ride with them if they had space, which they often didn't have. So yeah, it just didn't work out. And then I was married when I was 20.
Well, that'll complicate things.
And that, yeah, it did complicate things.
I'm married, and it's a huge pain in the butt.
So I didn't end up going home very much when I was first going to college. So I got a chance to see what Iowa City was like without any other students there. And just, oh man, it was great.
More sober, I mean, is mostly what it
well,
is.
Well, yeah, but like you said, you could go eat somewhere without it being too crowded. You could drive on the streets. All the friends I had who did have cars, they could drive without having people practically run in front of them and almost get hit. I mean, it was really nice, but when the students weren't around, that was really weird.
They're still not over the excitement that I'm home.
The cats?
Yeah. Yeah. Trish is over it, but the cats aren't.
So how are you doing? I mean,
well, wait, I'm Tony.
Oh yeah. And I'm William, and this is episode 470.
One job. One
seven,
job.
Four. Wait, 476.
Write it and post it next to the camera.
I mean, I have it in my head.
You do not.
Yes, I do. But if we start talking about other things,
many times have I told you, you cannot trust your head for anything?
You're right. I know that.
Specifically your head.
I mean, I could write it on my hand or like anything. Just like you said, I could do anything, but I don't, because I don't know. I'm stupid, I guess. But anyway, how are you doing? Because I've been thinking about you, obviously. That part's not unusual, but given everything that's been going on, I kind of worry about you a little bit.
Well, Dad's still dead. Brother is back in Minnesota. He is not, he is what's the word we all been using? Quarantine, not quarantining, isolating. He's isolating.
Oh.
From his family.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
For 14 days. Trish is just ride or die with me. I came home and now we're both isolating for 14 days.
Okay.
So
she was working from home anyway and all that, right?
Yes. But I mean, like, we're isolating. Like, oh. None of these trips to drive-thrus. I don't get to go shopping. Like, we have to have it delivered. And
okay.
Like, we're genuinely, because we don't know what I got in the planes, you know?
Yep, that's right. That's right.
I licked a lot of surfaces in those airports.
As you're wont to do, yeah.
Yes. But my brother is home. He's using somebody else's house that's not there in the same town where they live. So he's actually seeing his family a fair bit just at a distance. So, like, they had dinner together, but they were at, like, picnic tables and separated. And he's gone on walks with them, but at a distance. So, and he's got a bunch of adult kids and stuff that he's worrying about. So, that's still that. Mom is doing better than I expected.
Oh, well, that's good.
Mom is, I think, being smart about how she's handling things. She had the benefit that I was still there for a week, and I visited her basically every day, and often for several hours. One day we just sat around and talked for like 5 hours. I've spent more one-on-one time with my mom in the last few weeks than I had in the previous 15 years, and that I probably ever will again. But like, my sister stayed the first couple nights, but then my mom was like, go to your home and Tony don't stay. And she's like, I need to start spending nights by myself. And every morning she's like, it sucked. Every day when I talked to her on the phone first thing, she'd be like on the verge of tears. She's like, it was really bad. But she's like, I have to get used to it.
Yeah.
And she had me around, which was, it was a good sort of wading into it, because she had me around and my sister still comes up every few days and all that. And even stays with, I think she stayed with her the night I left. So that's good. And I mean, she's having a hard time, but she's processing, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
I have no idea what day it is, what time it is, where I am. But I'm so glad to be home. I feel like I feel like I'm not nearly as destroyed by my father's death as TV and movies have led me to believe. I've heard so many celebrities talk about the worst day of their lives when their dad died. And I'm like, no, it was sad. I've cried some. I miss him.
Yeah.
But he was an 85-year-old man who went quickly and peacefully. Like, that works.
Well, I've lost, you know, all of my grandparents and my mom. And I did not respond to any of them the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they were all different, and it had to do with different situations and different, you know, like with mom, it was a little bit sudden, right? I mean, we didn't really think it was going to happen, and that makes a difference.
Oh yeah.
And she was only in her 60s and all that, you know, I mean, so yeah,
this one was way faster than anybody expected. By a long shot, but
except
I
given
think it timed really well.
That's right. Given the circumstances, it was kind of a good thing and a relief, and it's hard to feel bad.
Yeah.
About
and my brother kind of didn't want to be there when it happened, which I absolutely understand. I kind of felt the same actually. And he left just a few hours before it happened. So couldn't have been more perfect. But yeah, I mean, I'm dealing, but I mean, okay, let's get into this. We got to get into this. So, I spent 16 days over there, only seeing my family and going back to my rental place.
Right.
The first few days was sort of with my whole family, which was fine, and taking care of my father, which was weird. And then there was a day or two that was really bad when we had to trade off who stayed up all night to watch him, and he kept tearing his clothes off and all sorts of things. And then hospice came in and did an amazing job, and then he died, and then I had a week. All that time when I wasn't, you know, visiting them or know that I was going to soon or whatever, I was high.
Yeah, I
think you did mention that. The whole time. Not when I was working either, which is why I quickly wasn't working anymore. And it wasn't normal high, people. It was weed with stats. It was high tech. Your state has legalized weed, and so they've worked out how to make it better stuff. It was insane. It was awesome. If they legalized weed in Iowa, I would become like one of those insufferable wine snobs, but about weed. Because there are so many variations. And I bought several different ones that had different impacts on me. I had some that was helping with my back pain, and I would take it some nights when my back was really bad. Others that were good for sleep. Others that sort of kept me awake when I wanted to be awake. It was really kind of fascinating. And let me tell you, that's a real easy way to get into mourning a loved one.
Yeah.
Because it makes you sort of relaxed and unemotional about it, and then you can like think through things without freaking yourself out or whatever. But at a certain point, when that's all you're doing is wake up, call mom, try and clean yourself up a little bit, go see mom for a few hours, which is mostly just going to be talking about how sad we are, go home, get high for several hours, go to bed. You just do that over and over again for a week by yourself during a pandemic in a place you don't live. You start to feel a little out of touch with reality. And I was so ready to come home. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. I feel out of time and and I wasn't keeping up on even news or anything. I was talking to Trish regularly, but it wasn't much. And it was all just sort of this haze of time. And so yesterday was not fun because it's a plane trip, but there you go. And now I'm here and I'm so glad to be here. I have slept in my own bed and I showered in my own shower. I have seen my kitties. I am still getting my head screwed on straight. I'm dealing with the withdrawal of not having weed now, which makes sleeping tricky. And I'm having to remember not to adjust the time zone for work stuff. But I'm getting there. I'm feeling pretty good today.
What's withdrawal from that like?
There is very little physical withdrawal from marijuana. There's a lot of psychological withdrawal.
Yeah.
The big one for me is harder to sleep. It took me a while to get to sleep. I slept good, but it took me a while to get to sleep. And then historically, I may find emotional frustrations more difficult to deal with. Because weed for me just very much, it doesn't make me happy per se or sad. I'm just like, cool, whatever. It also helped because otherwise there would have been a lot of boredom there. So I was good. And actually what I did, so I didn't watch a lot of movies or anything. What I ended up watching was a lot of the unscripted content off of Dropout. Because they have things like a Twitch stream they did for 3 hours where they were just screwing around and stuff, and they have it recorded. So I just watched them being silly with each other for like 3 hours. And it was really good for me because it felt like I'm hanging out with people, but I also don't have to participate. Right. So it was a really good middle ground for me, and I liked that. Less porn than I expected. I really thought that would be a solace, but I think I was too sad mostly and lonely. Porn is not good when you're lonely, which almost feels like it would be the opposite, but no. Slept a lot.
How was your flight? Was it okay? Or
yeah, it was pretty good. There was a cat on one of my flights. I saw three dogs in the airport afterward,
like therapy animals or something.
I think the dogs were. The cat, I think, was just getting transported. It was only 3 months old. It was pretty cute. It was sad for a while, but we should talk about this. I forgot about this. I watched movies on the plane.
Oh, okay.
I watched Black Panther on the way out.
Okay.
Which was good because I've been meaning to rewatch that for a long time. And sure. I was like, here we go. Still awesome. Like that movie a lot. Then on the way back, I was like, I don't want to think too hard, but it needs to be entertaining. And I went for one movie that it said this has been edited for content. And I'm like, well, fuck you then. I'm not doing that. And then I watched Victor Frankenstein.
The one with...
Ewan McGregor and Daniel Radcliffe, told from Igor's perspective.
No, not Ewan McGregor. Was it?
Oh, sorry. James McAvoy. James
McAvoy. Yeah, James McAvoy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was playing a celebrity game earlier with coworkers and that came up. Yeah,
yeah,
James McAvoy and Daniel Radcliffe.
I saw that, yeah.
I'm incredibly curious what your reaction was.
I don't really remember.
Oh, that seems fair.
I mean, it was, the whole notion of the monster, the creature being made out of dead parts, you know, I don't...
It has always bugged you, but that qualifies for literally everything that's not the book.
Well, except, I mean, I actually do like the 1931 film and the follow-up. I like those things.
But those have dead bodies in them.
I know, but I like them for what they are. I just don't really think of them as... I mean, to me, that the Frankenstein aspect is like... The whole thing is just an amalgam of a whole bunch of stuff, and the Frankenstein is just a name they throw in there, more or less. This film obviously wasn't intended to be a faithful representation of the book or anything. I mean, the Igor character isn't in the book, so no, it didn't. No. It struck
and
me more as
this whole
movie
is about him.
Yeah, and it struck me more as spinning off from the 1931 movie, so I didn't really have a problem with it in terms of all that. It seemed like it was in the same vein as the Robert Downey Jr.
Sherlock Holmes.
Oof. And that whole thing, and it's like, yeah, it's not really my thing. I didn't think it was like terrible or something, but it didn't, I mean, I didn't even talk to you about it. That's how much of an impact.
But that just means you forgot. That seems rough because I didn't think it was as bad as Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes. But then again, I'm in the minority of really
I'm not saying quality they're the same. I'm saying it's the same kind of thing where you make this film and it's got, you know, you're bringing a lot of modern filmmaking taste to bear on what you're putting together.
Yeah.
You know, you're not really, it's not really about being true to source material or anything like that. You're trying to make, like with the Sherlock Holmes things, you're actually trying to make kind of an action movie. I don't know if this was an action movie, but you get what I'm saying.
They marketed it that way, but it didn't feel that way. It had some action sequences, but it maybe qualifies as an action more than most other genres, but yeah.
Did you like it, or?
I think I did. It's very, I mean, it's not great. It's definitely not great.
Yeah.
And it had some subplots that felt really tacked on in weird ways. I had some trouble. The chemistry was there between Radcliffe and McAvoy, but they painted McAvoy as just such an asshole.
Yeah.
It was really hard to, like, we didn't see a lot of glimpses of kindness or self-awareness or anything in him. So that made it difficult. It is a completely different story, some of which is more believable than others. Something about, I mean, you could speak to this better than I could because I haven't seen a lot of Dracula, or not Dracula, Frankenstein stuff, but they really, I mean, well, I mean, I guess minor spoilers. Frankenstein's monster, such as it is, doesn't show up until the very end of this movie.
Yeah.
And I think that was unusual compared to a lot of Frankenstein's. It had nothing to do with the creature.
No.
And it really sort of delved in a little deeper to the philosophy of, like, why are you doing this? Should you be doing this? When things go wrong, why do you insist on continuing to do this? I mean, and I think got to it. And again, it got messy because they had some subplots that were trying to. Andrew Scott was completely wasted in this film. I don't mean he was on drugs. I mean, there was, you could have cast anybody in that role. And I love him, and I was super excited when I saw that he was the inspector. But that whole plot did not do what it was intended to do. I like Daniel Radcliffe. I just like Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, and both of the actors did a good job, I thought.
You spent a lot of time in this movie on him. It's the story of him. It's not the story of Frankenstein from Igor's perspective. It's the story of Igor.
Yeah.
And it had your standard... Well, here's what I'm trying to figure out. It's not... It wasn't one of the early attempts at the monster cinematic universe, right?
It was not.
Okay. It would have fit in.
Universal. Sure, it would have.
It absolutely would have fit in. I think you're right, yeah.
I think it was even made by Universal.
It just cracked me up, though, because it totally would have fit in all of that just fine. It's of the same quality.
In fact, I would have, I kind of liked the idea of the Universal Cinematic Universe. And if someone had told me, well, this is going to be the thing for Frankenstein, I would have thought, oh, yeah, that works. I actually thought what they did with the creature was kind of interesting, actually.
It was. And various experiments involved were handled very nicely, but the plot wasn't about them, which tends to be more often what happens.
But they didn't just stick with the standard, let's take a dead person and bring them to life.
No. We delved a little bit into actual issues of biology.
Yeah.
Which was nice.
It was very interesting.
Because a lot of things that involve giant beings don't do that.
Yeah.
Absolute favorite and least favorite moment of the entire thing. When the girl's meeting Frankenstein, she calls him Mr. Frankenstein. And he corrects her that it's pronounced Frankenstein.
I forgot about that.
I was like, that's brilliant, and I hate you. Like, and it so didn't land either. In the moment, the joke does not work.
Yeah, but it's
like it's painful, but it's such a great idea. Like, it was weird. I also watched a movie off Netflix called Elementary, the Blacksmith and the Devil. It's a movie that was made in the Basque region of Europe. And in fact, you can watch it in a variety of different voices. I watched it in the original Basque language with subtitles, and it's apparently based off an actual folklore about a blacksmith making a deal with the devil and then finding a way to sort of outsmart him, and then hijinks ensue. And it's pretty good. It's a pretty good old-timey horror story. I liked it. I have not been doing much else, though. I have not been doing a lot.
That story where a blacksmith makes a deal with the devil and then tricks him out of it or whatever.
Yeah.
That kind of story is the basis for both Jack-O-Lantern and Will-O-the-Wisp.
A tremendous amount of American folklore is about making deals with the devil and trying to cheat your way out of them.
Yeah, in the case of Jack-O-Lantern and after tricking the devil won't accept them into hell.
Mm.
But they're also because Jack / Will were both so mischievous, they weren't accepted into heaven either, and that's why they. But I think also what happens is, hell gives them like a coal or something from the fires of hell to carry with them or whatever. And it's put in a turnip, and that's the jack-o'-lantern. But for Will, he's given an actual torch from the fires of hell, and he carries it around.
The swamps.
But the story that you saw, there were no consequences to him tricking the devil?
Well, it's very complicated, and I don't want to spoil it too
okay.
much. But you get some weird cryptic narration at the beginning, but what you basically get started with is in this village, there's a blacksmith and he doesn't come out and his house is covered in like spikes and things and there's booby traps around it. And a precocious little girl ends up going in there to retrieve her dolly. And then things happen.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
yeah, I enjoy. I mean, full disclosure, that one wasn't on an airplane, so I was high when I saw it. But that's good. And the visuals are really impressive. They did some really good effects, mostly practical. Yeah, today was my first day back at work. Except it was really my first 4 hours back at work. I took the morning off because I knew I wasn't going to sleep, and I still had to unpack and all sorts of things.
One of the reasons I like those Will-O-the-Wisp stories is because if Will is a smith, of course, another thing he might be called in that occupation, especially in Northern England, is Wright. So, you know, his name's William Wright. That makes me really like him.
Inspires you to make a deal with the devil. When I think of American folklore involving this, I think of Bearskin. And the Edgar Allan Poe story, I Bet the Devil My Head, which that one's fairly straightforward. Do you know Bearskin?
That sounds really familiar.
We saw a movie of it in school. And I don't remember why. This guy makes a deal. He meets the devil out in the middle of nowhere, and he makes a deal with him, and then a bear shows up. And the guy stabs the bear, and the devil says, skin the bear, make it into a coat. And he's like, then you put on the thing. Here's the deal. For 30 years, you have to leave that on. You can't bathe. You can't clip your nails. You can't any other thing that would make you not disgusting. Also, you can't say the Lord's Prayer because this is a Christian fable, whatever. And in exchange, in the pocket of that cloak, because apparently he made it with pockets, there's just always money. And the story becomes a very Beauty and the Beast deal. He goes to some farmer's house and he's like, let me stay here. I have a bunch of money, even though I'm gross. And the other daughters think he's gross and one is nice to him. And he makes it 30 years and he goes back to see the devil. And then like in this one, he makes the devil wash him and clean him, which is pretty gross. And then he tries to make the devil say the Lord's Prayer, which doesn't work. So he didn't lose his soul. In the deal. The deal was if he didn't do it for 30 years, he'd lose his soul. So he didn't lose his soul. And then he goes back and he's still super rich because presumably he just emptied out his pockets like an hour beforehand. And then he's handsome now and he marries whatever. And the ending is the other two daughters who were so distraught that they'd missed out on this hot rich guy killed themselves and the devil got their souls. And at the end, he's like, so I got two souls for the price of one.
This is an American piece of folklore?
Yes.
I have never heard of this, actually.
Yes. The thing's called Bearskin. And then, yeah, there's just one about Poe has one about a guy who, whenever his catchphrase, I shit you not, is, I bet the devil my head. He just says it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one day they're someplace and he's like, I bet the devil my head I can jump over this thing. And this little dude shows up and is like, yeah, sure, we got a deal, and shakes his hand. And then he jumps over it and it cuts off his head.
That's a Poe thing? I've never heard that either.
It's because it's not one of the popular ones, that's for sure.
Huh.
It's just called I Bet the Devil My Head. It's in the same book that had the Death's Head Moth one, which was not that scary and also confusing to me because I didn't know what a death's head moth was when I read it. So that's an even simpler story. He sees the death's head moth through a telescope and thinks it's a giant monster over on the hill. Oh. The end.
He doesn't know how telescopes
I think
work.
He figures out afterward.
Oh, okay.
Like at the end, we all find out that it's just a moth in front of it. But like, yeah.
Oh.
These are not his highest caliber. None of this black cat business here.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever even heard of him.
No casks of Amontillado or Curse of Red Deaths. Just moth on a telescope and a dude who bets little old men for no reason. I don't even know what he would have won if he'd made it.
Were any of them in verse or were they all prose?
I think they were all prose. I mean, they might have been in verse in those sneaky ways that I don't know it's in verse. Like, isn't Cask of Amontillado technically in verse?
I don't think so, but I don't, maybe.
Mask of the Red Death? I don't remember. They sneak it in. It's like Shakespeare. where it's like, it's inverse, and sometimes I can tell, but sometimes I can't, but it's all supposedly inverse.
I mean, we have a book.
You don't have a
book. We have a book.
Oh, wait, here. You have a bunch of books. I can see them.
We have a book with
called Sync.
With some stuff from Poe, and pretty much everything in that book is stuff that I've read, either from that book or from other things, which I realize isn't all of his work. Like the book doesn't include his stuff. I forget his, he had a detective like Sherlock Holmes type thing who was French. I think, I don't know if I've read any of those, and that
it was Eugene Cocteau or whatever, was it?
I just don't even remember. He had that kind of thing before.
There's a famous actual French guy who was kind of Sherlock Holmes-esque, and I think somebody also wrote stories about him.
I don't think it's here. I think it's over.
It's also possible I'm lying or confused about much of this.
Well, Poe wrote some books about a really smart detective. This was before Sherlock Holmes. He wrote these. I think that Arthur Conan Doyle based Sherlock Holmes on Poe's.
No. See, people get that confused. Arthur Conan Doyle based Sherlock Holmes on the real life Ian Fleming. And then I get confused after that, but yeah.
Okay.
Also, it's technically Ian Fleming's creature. Ian Fleming was the doctor.
Yeah, Ian Fleming was the doctor. People always mess that up.
Yes. I was pissed too. Again, file under Andrew Scott poorly used in this one specific movie. The opening of The Inspector, you totally think it's a Sherlock Holmes thing because he's like so weirdly observant of shit he couldn't possibly know. Never comes up again. Never is explained why he could figure that shit out. Never comes up again. He's fine as a detective, but he doesn't have super Sherlock powers or anything. Like, I don't even know. It's annoying. Seriously, I have no idea what's going on.
Say, are you done?
More alert.
Something else you wanted to say? Aware
on weed than I am not.
Yeah, well,
I'm really starting to look like a lost Gibb brother with all this stuff. I don't know. As it all sort of becomes the same length.
It's hard to say because with your with the background on, part of what I see is the wall. Part of it I see what I think is hair. It's hard to tell. Plus, I don't have any glasses on, so it's kind of blurry. You know, I was going to get my glasses fixed so I'd be start wearing glasses again, except the pandemic happened, so.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm wearing my sunglasses with my glasses lenses put in them, because my glasses just split in two one day.
Oh.
But luckily, my sunglasses are the exact same frame, so they went in, stuck my regular lenses in here. I have the broken ones over there. My mom gave me a giant wraparound thing that I'll wear in the meantime for sunglasses if I ever go outside.
That's cool.
All right, we should draw something out of the hat because I don't feel like we had a lot of material to start with, but we have definitely exhausted what we had.
Yeah, I guess.
All right.
It seems so magical, and yet not.
This is from Craig. Have you ever spoiled your vote? Now, William, you frequently don't know what's going on, full stop.
I don't know what that
so,
means.
So I will tell you up front, this is not a phrase, like a comment. I don't know what the hell he's talking about either, is what I'm saying.
Oh.
Spoiled your vote. The only things I can think of, I can think of three things. Yes, tell me. My wife, who spent 6 months working for the county elections office and will never let me forget it, says that means to invalidate your vote.
How would I know?
Because it probably, well, I'm sure they would notify you in some fashion, but also It could happen right there if you were mouthing off or something.
If you were mouthing off.
No, every is that how it time works? You go to vote, they say you need to attest that you're voting once and only once. And 95% of people say, voting more than once? I didn't know this was Chicago. And so at this point, they might just smack you for that. I don't even know.
See, I was under the impression that if you made an error on your vote, I mean, I don't even know. Like, how would they contact you? You're not really telling the machine who you are.
That's true. It's a blind ballot.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. If you do something,
you would have had to do it while you were there, I guess. If you somehow spoiled it while you were there, or otherwise, if later you were aware of something that probably meant that it spoiled.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
I'm guessing.
I mean, certainly not. I mean, not that I know of.
No, me either. Craig, what kind of sketchy bullshit are you doing when you vote? Why is this coming up? I don't think it's a British thing. What are you up to?
I mean, I know of
what
ways.
What kind of scam are you pulling?
I know of the ways you can do it. You can like, for the absentee ballots, you can put you can fill in a dot and go way outside the lines so that they can't read it. You can put more votes in than you're allowed. I mean, there's
in
lots of
section
ways.
Section marked, do not write in this area. He wrote, okay.
Yeah, there's lots of, I mean, it tells you what things you should or shouldn't do if you don't want your ballot invalidated. So you know what they are, but nobody, I don't suspect anyone does them like on purpose just for fun or something.
If you'd like to know what quasi-legal or completely legal scam Craig is pulling in UK elections, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and Craig, you go there first and tell us where does this come from? What's going on here? What's good with this?
That's weird.
You can blame it on an uncle or something if you want, but I mean... Like, this comes up so little, William and I hadn't heard of it. And you're just right on it there. So, something's going on. Tell us. MagicalTalkingHat.com. All right. I'm going to draw another one.
So
that was
I can't,
not the bountiful discussion we thought it would be.
I can't believe the airplane let you take the hat on. How did you take the hat on the airplane without, you know, how'd you get it through security and all that?
The hat can be invisible when the hat wants to be invisible.
So it knew, hey, I need to be invisible, and it just made itself that, or?
I assume. I didn't pack it.
So you just sort of there. Thought the hat would know what to do, and you just went with it.
I mean, that's giving me more credit than I didn't give a shit what happened to the house. Or sorry, the house.
The hat.
The hat, and it showed up there.
Huh. Seems like it would have been a good
either.
Seems like it would have been a good opportunity to lose it.
But yeah.
But nope. Dang it.
Mm.
Oh well.
All right. It's another one from Craig.
Ooh. It's Craig night.
What was the most recent thing that gave you hope for the future? My father just died. How fucking dare you, Craig?
You're terrible.
Yeah, I'm just fucking with you.
hope for the future.
This and this, children, is why we did not draw any questions the episode that was all about my dad's death.
Right, right. That would have been awkward, I have to say.
We were thinking.
Yeah, awkward, very awkward, yep.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've talked about this recently. I want to give you a shot first.
I think it's interesting this question is being asked because it seems like this week I've read some news that it seemed like people, I can't even remember what it was now, but something was in the news, something was happening. And this particular article was talking about how people were responding to it. And this article didn't...
You paint a vivid picture, my friend.
I know, I'm so sorry. But whatever it was, people weren't responding to it like they weren't overreacting. They weren't taking up opposite stances and hating each other, whatever. It was just a very casual way that people took it. And I was like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. But since I can't remember it, let me just say, anytime I see something in the news that involves kids inventing something that solves a problem, or, you know, winning a science fair with something that's going to make humanity better, or anything like that, just about anything that deals with young people doing amazing things, that always encourages me. And that happens all the time. There's always something in the news somewhere,
yeah,
about somebody. And it doesn't always have to be a young person. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's an older person.
Old people never give me hope.
But I think during the pandemic, there's also been a lot of really heartwarming things going on with people helping other people, or, you know, making sure that an elderly person in the neighborhood is okay, or,
God, you know,
making noise that for the first or for the frontline people, and all that. There's a lot of heartwarming stories while the pandemic's going on. And that, of course, gives me hope.
I kindly gave you first dibs on this because I thought I'd talk about this before. And you came out swinging with getting hope from times when you read an article and the reactions of other people is not freaking the fuck out.
Yeah,
that
I
gives
do.
You hope.
I do get
and
hope.
And I was fine with that. And then you got to start biting my style.
Oh, sorry.
Getting into my answer.
Sorry.
Because as I've said before, people's reactions to the pandemic actually give me hope. Don't get me wrong. Still a lot of shitty people responding really shittily to the pandemic. But in general, people have really made an effort to look out for their fellow man and to take care of them and to make sure everybody's okay. Celebrities have been doing it. Some of the celebrities are clearly doing it because they need attention. But some of them are really trying to help out. The things that even these big companies are offering for free because they know we're all trapped inside. Like, I'm just really... maybe it's not as much kindness and giving as it should be. It is way more than I expected. And I'm very pleased about that.
Well, one thing about the pandemic that I've thought about is...
I do want to say that I also appreciate it when there's an article written and people don't freak the fuck out about it. Like, that's hopeful to me. I like that.
So, as you know, my wife and I used to watch the show Doomsday Preppers.
Yes.
And
I remember that.
One thing that I always think about with the preppers stuff that I see is there's always two parts. What I see is two distinct parts to prepping. One is you're doing things that like FEMA recommends anyway, for you to have maybe a couple weeks of extra food and
disaster
stuff.
Prep in general.
Sure. Now, of course, the preppers are sometimes doing a lot more than FEMA would recommend, but,
yes,
but there's that part. But then there's always the, you got to have a bunch of guns part.
Yeah.
Okay. And when we watch these shows, this is the part where the prepper starts saying things about human behavior that I happened to, my observation is humans aren't as like that or as wicked and evil and, I don't know, animalistic, I guess, than the preppers seem to think.
You clearly have not watched enough post-apocalyptic dramas.
Well, we do. We watch those too because we love them. But anyway.
Walking Dead, the one where all the electricity went out. Revolution, that was the one. All of these things show us that humans are the worst.
I know, and they're all only partially right about some of those things. But here the pandemic has happened, and part one of the preppers has been proven a little bit right. Like, everyone should have had some provisions and stuff, and if they didn't, they're probably not happy about that. So that part was right. But the part about people having general chaos and looting and all these terrible things are going to happen when the pandemic breaks out, well, those things didn't really happen at the scale everyone said that they were going to happen.
Gun shops are essential businesses.
I know, and people are buying them, but nobody's, it's not the chaos that a lot of, I mean, I even...
No, but once society falls, guns are going to be the new currency. So you got to stock up now.
Yeah, whatever. My point is...
I'll give you three pistols for that chicken.
no matter how often there's a big thing like this that happens.
Just shoot your own chicken, dude. No, I want that chicken.
And then human beings respond by being compassionate and by helping out. It seems like every time that happens, everyone acts all surprised. Like, why are you surprised? This is what human beings do. I mean, yes, you're going to have a few crazies that do stupid, crazy things, but in the bell curve of human behavior and human nature, that's actually not the rule. The rule is closer to what we're seeing, is how people care about each other and they try to help one another. And I realize most people have a very pessimistic view of humans and human nature, but I don't think the actual data, the data of what we can observe in the human behavioral sciences and in actual history bears out that, you know, most of the people are bad or are opportunistic. What we see, most people are very compassionate and empathetic, and they want when something like this happens. So, I don't know.
Two guns for the hat. I will give you two guns for your Batman hat. Two guns.
Wait a minute. What kind of guns?
What I got lying around here. One's going to be a pistol, that's for sure.
Oh.
The other. Okay, I'll give you one pistol.
Yeah.
And one broken shotgun.
No, I don't. Not into shotguns. A rifle.
I love that broken wasn't the deal breaker there. It was shotgun.
I can fix the shotgun. A rifle. I'd rather have two rifles, but if I'm going to take a handgun, not it's got to be a rifle.
Batman hat. I mean, come on.
I don't know how long we can keep that bit going, but
give you five guns for the fourth book on the left in that shelf. No, I think the title is going to be three pistols for that chicken. I don't think we're going to top that, but
so that the book you just asked for was Batman Masterpieces.
We got a theme here.
Yeah.
It seems how appropriate that I'm just giving you armaments in exchange for Batman stuff.
Batman stuff. And then there's the Batman Ultimate Guide to the Dark Knight. And then there's Batman The Complete History. I don't know if I've read that one. Batman Unmasked is pretty good.
It's just Bruce Wayne. They could just call it Bruce Wayne.
No, it's about Batman's impact on popular culture. And it deals with...
What? No. Batman Unmasked is Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
Why would you possibly name a thing about the lasting cultural impact of Batman, Batman Unmasked?
It's a double entendre, you know.
Batman is not unmasked. Unmasked is just Bruce Wayne.
Okay. So they just should have called the book Bruce Wayne?
Or, I don't know, something. The legacy of Batman or something. Unmasked is a play on words for a joke that doesn't fit.
I see what you're saying.
You don't say something is unmasked when you look at its cultural impact. No, that's not a thing. I'm angry. You get no guns now.
It's a good book, though. I thought it was good.
No, this has put me off Batman. No, I don't even want the hat anymore.
I've got a wizard staff here that shoots actual magical power. It even burned it a little on the edge there. You can see. What do you think? It's like 6 feet. Maybe
I'm not debating how many guns I'm going to give you for it. I'm debating whether to ask for more information, and I really can't. I think time has to give the answer. We're about time, so
okay.
I think I'm not going to learn what the fuck that is about. if you'd like to know what the fuck that was about, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and ask William what the fuck that's about. I keep forgetting to say what the show is. But
you want this?
Whatever.
It's from medieval times. This is
holy shit.
This is the flag I waved when I was rooting for the Blue Knight.
You went to medieval times?
A couple times ago. I've got another one up there.
How too. Am I just learning about this now?
Why would you even care?
Because that is far and away the most thing I am most interested about all of your existence.
What?
I am fascinated by medieval times. I've never been.
Oh.
Literally weeks ago, I spent a good 2 hours on their website. That's how fascinated by. There's not enough stuff on there to spend 2 hours. I had to reread things.
Yeah, I've been a couple times in
Chicago. Wow, we got to talk about this.
We do?
Yes, I want to know the whole experience. But
okay.
That'll have to be for next week. So tune in next week. We're going to get William's take on medieval times. I am very excited.
We have to wait clear till then?
Yeah. We got to record it. Yeah.
All right.
Also, we live in different places.
Yeah.
All right. So in the meantime, write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Little notes, comments, questions, things like that. Get in the blog and talk to us. We're lonely and isolated, so help us out here. We're going to get to the bottom of this election scam Craig's been running. And otherwise, just listen next week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.